Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 FY 2023-24 earnings conference call of Gufic Biosciences Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touch-tone phone. To remove yourself from the question queue, please press star and two. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Ami Shah, Company Secretary. Thank you, and over to you, Ms. Ami.
Thank you, Sagar. Good evening, everyone, and a warm welcome to Gufic Biosciences Limited earnings conference call for Q2 FY 2023-24. I have with me Mr. Pranav Choksi, the Chief Executive Officer and the Whole-time Director, Mr. Devkinandan Roongta, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. Avik Das from Investor Relations team to give the highlights of the business and financial performance of the company and to take questions, if any. We will begin the call with the business highlights and overview by Mr. Avik, followed by financial overview by the CFO. After the opening remarks, the operator will open the bridge for Q&A session. I'll now hand over the call to Mr. Avik. Thank you.
Thank you, Ami. I'll quickly provide you all with a comprehensive update on the current status of various initiatives and divisions of the company. I'll begin with the Indore facility. So the installation of equipment at our Indore facility is now complete, and we are progressing according to plan with the validation studies. Now, within critical care division, our portfolio experienced a strong growth across key molecules. We have a portfolio that is especially targeting the fast-growing segments of primary and secondary healthcare facilities. The commercial launch of dalbavancin post the DCGI approval was completed in this half of the year, and we are very happy to communicate that we've almost touched 400 lives in less than 60 days. And as you all know, that is a very unique product, and perhaps first time in India, it's finding wide application and acceptance. On the Cavim front, which is our product, ceftazidime-avibactam, it continues to be recognized among the top 20 launches, and it has established itself as a notable antibacterial injectable. And this is also the only brand in the top 20 which is an antibacterial injectable. Then on Immunocin Alpha front, we've concluded the trials for sepsis, and we are anticipating the DCGI approval in Q3. And on the dual-chamber bag front, we've been expecting the final price approval from meropenem in Q3, and subsequent to that, in Q3, we intend to launch this product as well. Now, in critical care, we've also some updates from our R&D. So our R&D team has been able to develop a key life-saving antifungal product that can be stored at room temperatures now, which will eliminate the need for cold chain handling. This will ensure that we can now make this drug accessible to the remotest healthcare centers in India and at affordable prices. So this is a great R&D achievement for us, and hopefully, we'll be able to replicate similar things for our other portfolio products as well. A first-in-class antifungal product is also set for launch at a very revolutionary price point. This will obviously mean that the accessibility and affordability of this drug goes up. Coming to Sparsh, in Sparsh, we had mapped out almost 8,000 hospitals, and very happy to communicate that we have almost reached out to 1,000 hospitals, and we're doing business with almost 1,000 hospitals now. We've successfully launched in 12 states, and we intend to add another 4 states, and our SKU count has already gone up to about 96. Most of our sales touchpoints in this division are doing well and is profitable. We've also launched a very unique product called Seraseal in this division. It's a hemostatic agent, and this has gained acceptance in leading hospitals, and it has started demonstrating its effectiveness in actual surgical procedures. So this, of course, Gufic is the only company in India which has this product. On the Ferticare front, we've established presence in nearly 60% of all IVF centers in India, and our brands and our products are the go-to choice for over 50% of the gynecologists. We are also working on recombinant alternatives to critical hormones. This will make us self-reliant and ensure steady supply, and hopefully in the next 18-24 months, we should be able to bring these products out in the market. Just some interesting update with Thymosin Alpha-1 here. We've concluded the trials for endometriosis, and we've got excellent results there. We are also working, we are conducting trials for recurrent implantation failure with Thymosin Alpha-1, and the initial results are very exciting for that as well. We'll keep you all posted as the trials progress over there. In our healthcare Stella and Spark division, the inclusion of the ENT specialty has strengthened our antibiotic portfolio, enhancing our capability to address, you know, larger medical needs. We've introduced Polmacoctriff in the orthopedic specialty. Dydrogesterone has also been introduced here to fortify our reach to gynecs with this product. And the earlier launched products, Guficam and Gufibase, they continue to gain momentum in this particular division. In Aesthaderm and Neurocare division, the Stunnox's success in the split-phase trial has created a lot of awareness and confidence within the fraternity. Today, we've almost 1,100 cosmetologists have tried, tested, and accepted Stunnox as a product. Our work for registering the fillers is on track, and we will keep you all updated with the outcomes of that. And we have set up a specialized neurology team in this half of the year, and to strategically target the critical neurology segment through our brand, Zarbot. So that team continues to reach out and educate the doctors of the various indications with which Zarbot can be used. On the international business front, we've received one new product approval from Sri Lanka, Chile, Myanmar, and Malaysia each. Along with that, we also received an injectable product approval from Australia and Brazil this half of the year. This opens up some of these very lucrative markets for this product as well as other products, because our facility now gets approved by these two regulators. And as on date, we have almost 200 products now registered across regulated and semi-regulated markets, with a presence in more than at least 40 countries, and we have a pipeline of about 150+ products under registrations as well. So all in all, you know, we are well poised to continue our growth and success in each of these initiatives and divisions. As you all are aware, we remain very committed to our innovation and completing our expansion, going live with it, and overall addressing the healthcare needs. So with that, I'll hand over the call to our CFO, Roonghta sir, for the financial updates. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Avik. Good evening, everybody. I'm going to highlight the financial performance of Q2 of financial year 2023-2024 versus the Q2 of financial year 2022-2023, as well as the half yearly performance of financial year 2022-2023 versus half yearly financial of 2023-2024. The current Q2 of financial year 2023-2024, the total revenue from the operation is 200.2 crores, whereas the previous year quarter, Q2 quarter, was 175.7 crores. The EBITDA for current financial year, Q2, is 39.7 crores, whereas Q2 of last financial year was 33.4 crores. EBITDA margin for current Q2 is 18.4%, whereas the previous Q2 was 19%. Profit before tax is 30.90 crores compared to 27.3 crores. Profit after tax was 23.2 crores compared to 20.2 crores. If I see the half yearly performance of current financial year versus previous financial year, total revenue from the operation is 410.8 crores compared to 341.3 crores. The EBITDA is 76.1 crore compared to 67 crores. EBITDA margin is 18.5% compared to 19.6% in last half year. Profit before tax is 59 crores compared to 55.5 crore last year. Profit after tax 43.8 crore compared to last year 41.3 crore. Thank you.
Sagar, we can now take the question answers round.
Sure. Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Bhavya Sunavala, who's an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Yeah, yeah. So I have two questions. My first question is, how long do we think it's going to take us to see decent revenues coming from Sparsh? You know, just trying to understand that we have launched in 12 states. So how long do you think we reach most of the states and we see some kind of sizable revenue coming from the Sparsh division?
Yeah. Hi, Bhavya. So Pranav here. Basically, for Sparsh, the way we are going is we are planning that to comb a state by state. So when we talk about sizable revenues, it will all depend on how much PCPM do we actually reach for a particular, I would say, zone or a particular state. Let's put it that way. So our immediate target is that we started off with 33 people. Now we are gone to around 42 or 43 people. When I'm talking about 43 people, those are the actual key account managers or the people on the field, and then of course you have the subsequent manager. So right now the PCPM would have reached close to around 6 to 7 lakhs. We hope that we can reach 10 lakhs, and of course this is something which is substantial, one reason being because we have almost 96 SKUs being sold by them, so they have a good basket to be sold, and that's why the PCPM is justified. According to me, whenever we see a 10 lakh PCPM coming in, we just put one more person in that area for the expansion. So again, talking about substantial things, so once you do the math, doing around close to 3-4 crores per month is something. But when I mean substantial, we hope that we can reach an average of approximately 6 to 7 crores per month, you know, by the end of the year, by the end of the financial year.
Okay, so you mentioned currently it's around 7 lakhs.
Yeah,
is that correct?
So it's okay. Around 3 crores. Right now, okay. An average, yeah.
Makes sense, understood. Just one last question. You know, in the last call, you had just mentioned that the investment we did in the new plant for someone else would be higher. I'm not trying to quote you on that, but just trying to understand what has enabled us to get this kind of value that, you know, we have. Is it something on the plant packaging side, or if you can explain how have we managed to make it much more valuable for us than what others might have taken?
So actually, I didn't. That's what you really put me on the spot. What I meant was, with pure humility, is just because of the experience what we have in Navsari, in terms of, you know, what is relevant, what is not relevant, what is redundant, and especially when we talk about economic of scales, you know, sometimes if you put, let's say, 2 lyophilizers or 3 lyophilizers, it would still cost you 200 to 300 crores. But if sometimes you put 6 lyophilizers and you do a little bit of modification in terms of the capacity of the condensing capacity and technical things, you know, like the packing config and other config, that is where, you know, the expertise of being in the field of manufacturing of injectables really helps us for that, you know, that we are a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of our understanding what is needed, not needed. So what I meant was the capacity in such, the capacity which we have in terms of economic of scale is something which we are trying to use in our favor. And by this, what I meant is because of the designing of the grade B area, the grade C area, how compact can we make it? How compact can we, you know, try to make the product processing unit, the lyophilization unit, even the packing hall for that matter, even the quality control systems in terms of, you know, the equipment and the stability chambers. That is what I meant. But I didn't mean that. I mean, it just said that tomorrow, because of this knowledge bar, we are somewhere much, I would say, efficient, I would like to say, nothing else.
Okay, understood. If you don't mind, can I just squeeze in a last question?
Yeah, sure. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just trying to about Arisia, the aesthetic clinic we have. Are we planning to open a few more, and do you see this becoming a profit center vertical, a different vertical that we might enter into?
No, actually, Bhavya, there are too many things happening, right? So I think Arisia was clearly brought with a vision of making like a training center and at the same time making like a, you know, like a brainstorming center for doctors to come all over and, you know, get the new, get trained for new equipments, or they have their own domain, knowledge domain, which they can come and, you know, share it with other team members also. At the same time, it can be also used for, you know, certain new trials or certain new products. Our end goal is to actually sell botulinum toxin, our Stunnox, and we want to sell our fillers and the different aesthetic products which we have. At the same time, we feel that in India we have amazing doctors, but at the same time, what the people of India need in terms of the population, like, you know, catering to 140 to 145 crores, we need a good set of doctors who not only are, I would say, focused or, you know, a little bit densely available in Bombay, Delhi, Chandigarh or Bangalore. If we can get centers which are set up in tier two towns also, that is where the new growth and the new India is coming from. So we also hope that with Arisia now, and of course we are opening, that doesn't mean that, so the strategy will not be to create more Arisias as a profit center. The strategy would be to create, you know, training centers and, you know, knowledge dissemination, I mean, dissemination centers around India where there's a catchment area. Like opening an Arisia in Chandigarh and Delhi might not work for us, but opening something in Nashik and then Hyderabad and then Raipur, or for that matter, in those towns is much better, where we can look at, you know, more and more, I would say, you know, doctor in discussion and doctor knowledge spreading. So this is where I would come from.
Okay, I understood that. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Sure. So I think, before we go to the next call, I think there have been some questions which have come also by mail before and by some of them. So I think I'll take those forward right now. So in terms of Indore, there are a lot of people who are, you know, asking us, you know, in terms of the capacities and the impact it would have. And, you know, right now, of course, we have Navsari, and we have also, for that matter, a good capacity in Navsari. So why is that Indore required? So just to share something with you all, I think apart from the Indian pharma market, which we feel will go through that level of expansion, we also feel that specifically the accessibility of injectable products or ICU products is something which we foresee going on and expanding in a big way. And for that matter, I feel that we feel that the Navsari facility should be almost full of capacity by June or July 2024. And that is where the need would come for an Indore facility, where I am sure that in the first few years it might be maybe 25-30%, followed by maybe 40-50%, and followed by 70%. But that is the requirement that we feel that, you know, if we try to make it at that time, we'll be too late. And also, every new facility has their own gestation period in terms of regulatory guidelines, you know, getting the approvals done. And nowadays, more and more sophisticated, I think as you have seen in the guideline, the guidelines are getting much more stringent. The countries are getting much more, you know, they expect much more in terms of documentation. So we feel that even if we get the facility ready and, you know, the production started very soon, then the entire, I would say, timeline would still be around 6-8 months where we actually gain steam. So that's the relevance of having an Indore facility, you know, kept it ready. And I feel we have enough molecules, enough products in the pipeline. At the same time, we have still a lot of geographies to, I would say, get into, which we feel we will be ready with the Indore facility coming up. So this was just one question on the way. So I will try to answer maybe some questions which now are coming beforehand also for the meeting. This is something new which we are trying. So I think, but we can go on to the next caller, please.
Thank you so much. Before we take the next question, I would like to remind participants that you may press star and one to join the question queue. The next question is from the line of Aditya Pal from Motilal Oswal Financial Services. Please go ahead.
Hi, Avik. Hi, Pranav. Hello, Devang Anandan.
Hi, Aditya. Please go ahead.
Hi. So thank you so much, and congratulations on a really good performance. So Pranav, just wanted to understand the growth that is coming. So where is this growth coming from? Has it been broad-based? Is it coming from domestic or international? So if you can just give me some color on that.
I would still say that, of course, the growth, as I mentioned before, let's divide the growth into two parts. One is domestic and the export. Export, I mean, domestic is still ruling the growth, I would say, a story much more. And that is also having maybe one inorganic reason also. The inorganic reason would be Sparsh to some extent because that is something which we had initiated only in the month of end of last year, end of financial year last year. So that is one of the reasons. Also, as I mentioned, in the critical care, whatever shortfall we had, so even though there's erosion in prices, but itself the market has reacted, which we saw a big lull last year. That market has expanded. Plus certain benefits coming from the infertility market, and also as Avik mentioned during his introduction, so the dydrogesterone and the infertility and gynec market, then HMG, the new launch which we have done with the help of HCG Traces, and also now with the help of, I would say, in polmacoxib in the mass marketing division, and to some extent, I would say botulinum toxin also. Why I say to some extent? Because on the bigger scheme of things in terms of the company, botulinum toxin still has a small base. So even though it is increasing by adding maybe 50, 80 doctors month over month, we still see a market where the product itself is almost doubling up or more in a yearly basis, but still it's a small component as compared to the entire company. Coming to the international front, I would say the growth is there, but not as aggressive as the domestic part. The reason for the growth being limited, but we have almost now the business which is mostly secured in Germany, Portugal, Canada, and Brazil. So nowadays, like I think, and that's where the Indore facility plays a big role. The capacities more or less will be chock-a-blocked by June, July. So I would say if the growth is, let's say, 10, right now, I would still say 6 to 6.5 would be from domestic and 4, 4.5 would be from export.
Understood. Understood. So this really helps. And the new product that you are coming in with, for which we have done R&D. So what would be the market size, revenue potential for those products?
So there are several. So if I say in critical care, when we talk about the new antifungal which we are coming up with, or let's say the sepsis product which we are coming up with, it's almost like let's focus on the antifungal first. So antifungal, there are options of the echinocandins, the fungins, all the way to a basic amphotericin B to the basic ketoconazole also. So the entire market would be around 500-600 crore. But of course, this entire market would just help with the new addition of an antifungal because when a patient has to take an injection every day, instead of that, the patient would require only one injection in a week. I mean, so it's like one injection on day one and one injection on day five or day six, depending on the patient's load. So we would be addressing a part of this market, which is anyway growing in a much bigger way, like I said. And then let me give you an example of an infertility product. So right now, you have this HMG, which is a human menopausal gonadotropin, which plays a big role in the IVF treatments, where the quality of the ovulation, I mean, not only the ovulation time, the right ovules, the number of eggs available for fertilization, I would say they all play a big role, and this HMG plays a big role. Now, there, in the last 2 to 3 years, we really have tried to find out the reason that why a particular HMG maybe works excellent in patient A, but whereas sometimes there is an issue of a cycle going wrong in patient B. As you know, most of you all will be aware, when IVF cycle is there, some people are lucky in cycle one, some people require two cycles, some people are so unfortunate. For whatever reason, they have to wait for cycle three or cycle four. There, always the reason might not be inflammation. So what are the reasons by which the patient has an issue? So either they have some intrinsic body issue, they might like things like endometriosis, or some people have some genetic defect, or some people have some other, I would say, diabetes and other complications lead to some issue where there's inflammation in the body by which the fertilized egg doesn't get implanted in the thing. So there are multiple reasons. But one of the reasons can be where the poor quality of the ovules or ovum coming out. And that is where if we can come up with a much more better form of HMG, which is much more standard, so be it patient A or patient B, let's increase the chance of the doctor making that lady's IVF cycle successful. That is where the research is coming from. So the HMG market itself is around 200-300 crores. But also, if you see, since the HMG had an issue, a lot of doctors actually use a recombinant FSH in that case to get the product done. But they would still prefer a pure HMG if they could get the result. Putting something recombinant also good, but it's just FSH. A combination of HMG is basically a combination of FSH and LH. And when you have a better form of a purer form of HMG, like we have Ferring, I think Ferring's Menopure is the biggest example, and they are doing a wonderful job globally. Still, the drug of choice would be then a pure HMG rather than the RFSH. And that is where we feel that if we can launch this molecule, and that's why our trials are successful, and we feel we are quite getting good results. And we are doing a sort of a time-lapse study also with a doctor here in Mumbai, where we actually are understanding the actual cycle of menopausal cycle of a lady, where we actually, once we gave a lady the injections of our HMG, how was her issue before, and once we give her the our HMG injections, how the quality of ovum and the entire ovulation cycle has become so upgraded. So such things also help us to address a bigger market. So that is the 200-300 crore of the HMG plus the market of the RFSH. And then followed by, other innovations like, botulinum toxin, we look at new drug delivery systems, which are like, topical, or which are in the form of Thai tea for pain management. So we try to get these different things done. I'm not saying that, we are successful. We try to work on 10 things, maybe 6 or 8 of them fail. We are only successful in maybe 2 to 4. But, this helps us to maybe come up with some differentiation, which eventually we can cater to the market. So, again, the different markets and different things will be there. But we are trying to, make a mark and make some difference there. So, I hope I answered your question. So, I cannot put a number to it, but it's different segments and different products giving us different opportunities.
Understood. So, thank you so much for highlighting, and congratulations again.
Sure. Thank you. So, like I said, thank you, Aditya. Now, before we move on to the next question, there have been other questions from the market in terms of the new, I would say, Penem block and the DCB also. So, there have been some questions that why the DCB got delayed, and when we have been talking about some, so I'll try to answer those questions also. So, just to share that, the DCB was planned to launch last year, and we had all the equipment, all the inventories, everything is, we are holding it since more than a year. But then there is also a question of getting an approval of price from the, NPPA department. So luckily around a month ago, we got a price approval for piperacillin tazobactam, but unfortunately, the price increase was only 15%. And I think that price increase was not able for us to justify the launch of the piperacillin tazobactam, because the cost, the MRP is around close to 400-450 rupees, and a 15% doesn't cover the cost of the bag. So then we decided that, as meropenem is the only product which looks viable now. So basically products which are above 1000 rupees or 15 rupees, which are in MRP, what I'm talking about, where the cost of the bag can be justified. We are trying to talk to the NPPA and explaining them the USPs of our product and the benefits of, no dilution errors and no cross-contamination and complete collapsing bag with no atmospheric air getting into. So we are trying to convince them that why a 15%, maybe a little bit more than 15. I mean, we are demanding almost close to 40-50%, but why a 15-20% is not enough, because innovation requires that additional push for us to go and get that, extra valuation done. So we are trying to do that. But however, let's see. I mean, we are trying a level best to put our case towards the government of India. And that's the reason we are about to launch. And I think the second part of your question was, once we launch it, what sort of a traction would we expect? So again, let me clarify that these dual chamber bags would not completely replace the vials. So while market will still continue to grow, which is anyway going to be part of our product basket, we are just giving a differentiated product where our doctors can always give this option additionally to their patients, depending on their profile, that, this is an additional thing which is much more of a safer product. The patient compliance is better, as well as the administration compliance is also much more superior than what it is otherwise. So this is where I think we feel that the product is, much more superior, and then when we can take it, I think it will be going to be a great thing. So I think that's it. I think nothing from my side. I think if we don't have any other questions, I think, can we shut, or if we have anything? Hello?
There are no further questions, but just a reminder to participants, in case if you have any questions, you may press star and one to join the question queue. Yes. So we have the next question from the line of Yash Tanna from iThought Portfolio Management Services. Please go ahead.
Hi, Pranav sir. Thank you for the opportunity and congratulations on a good performance. Sir, I wanted to understand on the cash flows front, it seems to have improved because of decreasing inventories, but our trade receivables have again been on the higher side. So can you tell us the reason for this?
Yeah, so I think two reasons for that specifically. If you see that we also have right now created this new Sparsh division, where the entire impetus is where we directly bill to the hospital, and the hospital cycle of payment is all the way between 60 days to 120 days depending on their consumption, which is normally there. So that is one of the reasons we have seen this again. Of course, assuming 3 crore per month for the last 3-4 months, I'm assuming that is one of the reasons it has gone up. Secondly, all the contract manufacturing business of Gufic has now almost moved to, on paper it's almost 90 days, but we look at almost 120 days which is there. So when you factor in the contract manufacturing and the Sparsh, which is the two reasons which we feel that it is there. So collection is coming in and moving on, but as and when the turnover is increasing, these are the two main divisions which is a little bit stretching our collection cycle as of now.
Right, sir. And so, we are expecting Sparsh to grow to the run rate that you called out. And that means that this should remain on the higher side even going forward, right?
Yeah. So I'll tell you the reason. So there were two options, and this was a dilemma which we had, you know, earlier when we were selling in critical care or infertility. Sometimes when we try to push the distributors for payment, there was always a leakage of margin which was happening down the line. And that is where, you know, sometimes the interest cost for us the year is around maybe 8% plus or minus, 8 to 8.5% plus or minus. But sometimes just because the hospital pays the distributors after maybe, you know, 90 days or 120 days or even sometimes 150 days on a higher side, I'm saying, on a very extreme side, otherwise 120 days, they used to take the margins of almost 20% and 25% instead of the designated 10% which we have. So as a company, we always felt that if we have to give an additional credit of around 60 days or 90 days, at the same time, we are getting real-time data what the hospital is buying, at what rate they are buying, what is their consumption potential versus what is they are buying from us. So I thought it was a small price to pay, because interest point of view, if I consider 8% on a 12 months and then 2-3 months, if I consider around close to 2%, that's a small price to pay against the 25%, the additional 15% I was paying to a channel partner, and I had no access to data. So yes, you're right. Even if we increase it to 6 crores, I would still like to deal directly with the hospitals in those cases via these channel partners where we control the collection, because the transparency and the pricing and the margin, especially the margin dilution is not there.
Right, definitely makes sense. And one question on the borrowings. What is our debt repayment plan now? And we have also raised some money. What is our debt repayment plan now?
So right now, I think the debt repayment would be done by November. I mean, because the announcement was in October. So the entire 99.99 crores, which was received from Motilal Oswal via the preferential offering, would be going towards debt. So 50% of the 99.99 would go towards term loan, and the remaining would go towards the CC limit. There also, we are waiting the term loan. So, moment the term loan gives us the benefit of where there's no prepayment option coming up, which will come up in maybe April and will come up in next June, July next year. So, we will be using the same amount which is parked in the CC limit, which has the same interest percentage to be paying off the long-term thing. So, this is what we are planning. So, you will see this effect in, I would say, December or I would say March balance sheet when it is out.
Sure, sir. Got it. Thank you and best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. The next question is from the line of Ayush Mittal from Mittal Analytics. Please go ahead.
Yeah, please. Good afternoon, everyone. Am I audible?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Yeah. So my question was similar to the last participant around the weakening working capital. Though you have been explaining that it's because of the extended payment cycle by our customers. But then if we look at our position, like we are the contract manufacturing partner to most of the major MNCs, and we bring a lot to the table in terms of new innovations, lower costs, and so many other things that we do. So why are we not being able to control our credit cycle and also the inventory management? Like overall working capital, if I see, it was improving really well over the last 2-3 years, and now it has deteriorated quite a lot. So that is where I would like to have some more insight.
So let me answer your inventory question first. And of course, Roonghta sir is also that he can maybe back me up once I'm done. So the inventory cycle, if you see historically of Gufic and otherwise also, only during the time of COVID, we had a, you know, I would say a squeezing of the cash flow cycle, because a lot of it was, you know, I think we are making it today and it is directly going to the patient on the end of the week. You get my point. Otherwise, you know, we had trying to put channel on the CNF level, at the channel to put the level at our Navsari stock, and we should at least maintain some stock. Because any injection when it comes, I'll just explain to you. So let's say any injection, the raw material comes, the raw material takes almost around 15 days to 20 days to test. After 15 days to 20 days to test, it takes approximately around, you know, I would say production of around 5 days, followed by the lyophilization of another maybe 5 to 6 days. Then there is another sterility testing of around 15 days. Then after that, you know, there is a logistics of around maybe 6 to 7 days. And this is why I'm talking about the majority of the turnover, because this is including exports and this is including the domestic market at the same time. The other thing, I'll come to contract manufacturing separately. So contract manufacturing contributes to around 20-25%. So I will come to that separately. So because of this, you know, the entire stock of RM which has to be kept, the entire stock of the WIP which has to be kept, because even during WIP, there is also a question of having certain tests which have to be done, which sometimes they have to be sent to an external, like for example, I'll tell you, for HCG and HMG, we need to send this, once the vial is made, we need to send it to a external testing laboratory by which, because of animal testing, we come to know the potency of the product. Same thing with ulinastatin, same thing with botulinum toxin also. So in all these cases, we need to wait for almost a month and month and a half after the production is done for the product to actually be used and sent to the market. So that is one reason for the inventory which we give. And also one other reason we also have spoke about in the earlier calls, the major inventory of almost 22 crores which we see right now also is because of the dual chamber bags which we have been carrying forward since last year, which we were supposed to launch last year in around maybe Q3. We are still stuck because the NPPA permission has not come. So I hope now it should come, because the FIPTAZO permission has come and the meropenem permission will come now in Q3. We hope so, with the desired MRP depending on the judgment of the honorable government. But we feel that we can launch the dual chamber bags, and that would, you know, help us to remove this 22 crore inventory at least by the next year. The third thing is, you know, the reason for inventory is, you know, a lot of validation batches are done. So today, before we get into Indore or we get to a lot of R&D batches, I mean R&D is done, and then there are validation batches done in Navsari, which might be for Navsari export or it might be for Indore also, where we have to take 3 batches at least, which is a minimum batch size. And then once from there, we show a tech transfer to Indore, or we use the remaining batches to make dossiers, which are eventually used to also, you know, register the product in international markets of choice. So because of all these factors, you know, we need to create, there are always a substantial inventory. Like I'll tell you, when the Germany business started, the vancomycin batches were taken in, I think, in 2017. And then the actual approval came by 2018 end. And then by, I think, January 2019, it was shipped with only a 1 year shelf life, because that was the only thing which was possible. Even though we had a 3 year shelf life, we, I think, almost 1.5 year went away in this entire process, and then we had only 1.5 year left on the shelf life. So this is more or less what we do with validation batches. When we go to US, when we go to Indore and there'll be US markets involved, we'll have to carry inventory for validation batches till the actual approval comes and till the US comes for inspection. So we will be carrying maybe 5, 10, 15 product validation inventory for maybe a period of a year or year and a half also, till the actual approval comes for our generics also to start off with. Forget the ANDAs which will be filing later on. So this is an example, the question about this. Coming to the contract manufacturing part, for which the trade receivable is an issue. And the main issue there is, you know, be it a overall cycle thing which has normally come after COVID, especially after COVID when the inventory cycle got blocked off. Be it a Abbott or be it a Glenmark or be it a XYZ, I mean I can name 5-7 companies which are the major contract manufacturing partners of us. They all have now made it mandatory in the PO that it's a 90-day cycle which is there. The same 90-day cycle we give it to also some to our third-party people where we buy our products from also. So in the pharma industry, according to me, and this is what we follow. We almost follow the 90-day cycle where the actual money comes after 120 days. So this is the main reason which I feel why which this is done. We, of course, at the same time, it's not something we are good. I think the domestic marketing in terms of our own branded business, that is something which is really improving, and that's why you see a little bit, it's not, you know, the detrimental of that thing is not much more. It's only related to the Sparsh and the, what do you call, the CMO, our own branded business. The cycle has been much more healthy. On the contrary, it's much more, it's improving also quarter by quarter. I think these are my feedback, but I think Rungta sir, maybe you can add if I have missed out something.
For the current quarter, it has jumped to 215 crores so compared to 175 crores. There is a jump of around 40 crores. And if I add GST 12% average, so there has been increasing in the debtors by 90 days, it comes to around 50 crores. And remaining is because of the Sparsh division where the credit period is more than 90 days. Average of our credit period is around 97, 98 days, including GST.
Okay. So, sir, like, Professor, you also highlighted, like, we have been emphasizing on our direct branded business, which goes to the consumers. How much would that be of our overall business? In that segment, what will be the net working capital?
Yeah, so let's put Sparsh out of it. Without Sparsh also, it would be around close to 52 to 53%. Would be our branded business in India.
Yeah, and in this, what is the net working capital days that
there, we have? I think we get an all on average. Inventory cycle put aside, if I just put my first sale in the market, we get our money average between 45 to 50 days.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Amisha for closing comments.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. If you have any further questions, please feel free to reach out to our investor relations team. I'll just repeat the disclaimer before we end the call. The information, statement and analysis made in this document describing the company's objectives, projections and estimates are forward-looking statements, and no representation or guarantee either expressed or implied is provided in relation to this document. The document should not be regarded by recipient as a substitute for the exercise of their own judgment. The company undertakes no obligation to update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a new result of new information or future events or otherwise. With this, we can end today's call. We thank you all for joining.
Thank you. On behalf of Gufic Biosciences Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.